You're listening to Trek FM.
Want to join in the conversation and share your thoughts on this episode? Join the Babel Conference, our listeners' discussion group on Facebook. Just type B-A-B-E-L into the Facebook search field, and we look forward to seeing you there.
This is Steve Sansweet of Rancho Obi-Wan, and you're listening to the 602 Club.
Hello and welcome to the 602 Club, your show for all things outside of Star Trek here on the TFM network. And I'm so excited to be here this week. And I've got a very special guest. This is a very longtime listener and a longtime friend of mine. I'm so excited that he's here to help me talk about the brand new Captain America movie, Captain America, Brave New World. And we'll talk about whether or not it's a Brave New World. But I'm here with none other than Yancey Evans. Yancey, goodness, it is just great to have Galandro 1 here in the 602 Club.
Well, thank you, Matt. It's awesome. It's always good to see your face and good to talk with you. And I am looking forward to talking about Captain America, Brave New World.
Yes, I think it is going to be a lot of fun. People probably actually don't know this, but Yancey and John and I literally talk to each other every single day, and
yes,
multiple times a day. And so we are in constant communication. And so it's so great, just to be able to see you and be able to talk to you. So hopefully everybody will enjoy the conversation. Before we get started, of course, we do appreciate everybody listening. Thank you for taking the time out. If you like the show, you can always help us out big time by going over to Apple Podcasts, giving us a star rating review. You can also give star ratings over on Spotify. That's helpful, too, if that's where you're listening to podcasts. Another great thing is word of mouth, especially on social media. So if you like the show, share it with people, repost it, all that kind of stuff. We'd love to talk to you over on social media. We're on X Twitter at the 602 Club. On Instagram at the 602 Club TFM. You can also find us on Facebook at facebook.com/TrekFM with the entire network. And if you want to have a deeper discussion with all of the listeners of the network, you can go over to the Babel Conference, which is our listeners-only discussion group on Facebook, and talk to everyone there, as well as, you can support us over on Patreon. If you like the things that we're doing here, we definitely could use your support. So patreon.com/TrekFM is the place where you can do that. And then, of course, you can find everything that's happening on the network at Trek.fm. Yancey, I wanted to ask, before we like dove into even talking about kind of like, you know, continuing the story here with Captain America and all that stuff, I wanted to gauge where you are just kind of with Marvel. Because maybe I'm wrong, but I feel like I know they had the Spider-Man cartoon that's come out. And then we also had What If Season 3. But I feel like the last live action thing, if I'm not mistaken, was Agatha All Around.
Yeah, I think you're correct. Yep.
So with that, I'm just kind of wondering, like, where are you coming into this movie in the first place, just with Marvel in general? How are you feeling about Marvel? Was this something to which, you know, when you saw the trailers, you thought to yourself, oh, well, that looks exciting? Or was it one of those things, well, I'll see it, I hope it's good? You know, where were you?
Well, I'm a bit of an old school Marvel fan. I collected comics starting in the 70s through the 80s. Got married and that kind of went by the wayside, but I've always had a special place in my heart for Marvel. Captain America was one of my favorite comics as a young kid. Especially the Invaders with Captain America, Bucky, Namor, all in a superhero team fighting Red Skull. That was like awesome. I have generally overall enjoyed most of the MCU phases 1 through 3. You know, there's a couple of films that aren't as great as other films, but I've enjoyed it for the most part. I used to keep up with Marvel Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., even though that's not even considered canon anymore. And Agent Carter. But somewhere around phase four, it seems to have kind of gotten away from Marvel a bit, and there's just not a consistent quality from there's not this consistent quality from show to show. You could always depend on Marvel, even if you didn't love something, that there'd be some level of enjoyment there. There's been a lot of ups and downs these last two phases. But I was looking forward to this movie. I remember it being hyped up as, this is kind of a return to form of like Winter Soldier. And they really kind of pushed that in the marketing. And then I saw the trailer and I was like, okay, I love Sam Wilson, the character. I love Anthony Mackie, the actor. He's fantastic. I may not have loved Falcon and Winter Soldier, but he's got a lot of charisma. He plays the part well. And I was looking forward to this film. So.
I think just as what I watched last, I think with Marvel, the last thing that I saw live action, I believe, with Marvel was possibly Echo as a show. I'm trying to think, what was the last film? I guess it was Deadpool Wolverine, because, and so with those are the last two things that I had seen live action. I haven't watched What If season three, and I haven't watched the Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man. Too many other things on my plate to watch. But I agree with you in that sense of where, I think it's no secret that I think a lot of people feel that, the first three phases of Marvel, even though there's some unevenness to it, on a whole, it's enjoyable, it's good, and it really had a sense of purpose. I've just been in this place, I think, with Marvel coming into this, where it's like I don't quite exactly know what we're trying to do, because I don't know if they feel like they totally know what they're trying to do, and a part of that has felt like the shows have had a hard time kind of fitting into the Marvel Cinematic Universe in a way that feels cohesive to a whole, more than just kind of slapping the Marvel sticker on something and just putting content out for more content's sake. Now, when this was coming up, like you, and people couldn't go back and listen, Falcon Winter Soldier, I didn't love it, I didn't hate it. There were things I really enjoyed about it, though. I do like the character of Sam, and his relationship with Bucky is what makes that show worth watching in the first place. Just their interaction's fantastic. And so the idea of a film where we get to focus on him as Captain America, that was great. And I like you, I kind of love the idea of the vibe, what they're going for. Winter Soldier is still my all-time favorite Marvel Cinematic Universe film. And
Same here.
yeah, so I, if that's what you're going for, if that's the kind of vibe you want to capture with Sam Wilson and how he might handle this, I'm all for that, and then like you, the trailer came out and I was like, okay, definitely hope they upgrade the visuals and stuff, but otherwise, at least the vibe of the trailer made it feel like Winter Soldier. So I was like, okay, we're in a place where, this can be really good. So, one of the things then, as we kind of discussed a little bit, even just with our thoughts coming in, as they're continuing the story, this movie is definitely trying to pick up threads that have been out there in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, since the end of Endgame. Of course, from Falcon and the Winter Soldier, we're picking up some threads from the Eternals, and as well as reaching all the way back to Phase One, Movie Two with the Incredible Hulk, and that's kind of the math. Like, if you put those three things together, it equals Captain America: Brave New World. And so I wanted to ask you, pulling those disparate elements together to create this story, especially reaching all the way back to the original phase. Like, how do you feel like that works to create a cohesive story here to really then try and propel us forward? Because, I mean, one of the big thoughts of this movie that's brought up is that, oh, we're gonna restart the Avengers. And so this movie really does feel like, okay, we're trying to move this ship forward finally. We've been, you know, there's been no wind out here. You know, we're like a Tommy Boy. Could use some wind out here, you know? And apparently we just could have used a couple hundred pounds there, blimp, because we've just been sitting in the same spot for a long time. Anyway, too many analogies. So how did that then work for you here in this film?
So one of the problems that I think we've been faced with, in particular, starting with phase 4 and 5, is just the sheer volume of content. So if you look at the totality of the MCU, there's like, I don't know what the official count is. I think there's like 63 or 64 total MCU projects that are considered part of the Universal canon. But just since the beginning of phase 4, so we're talking literally Falcon and Winter Soldier, there have been 28 projects. So almost 38% of the content from MCU has come these last couple of years. And it's almost like this Frankenstein's monster. I was actually shocked that they went back to phase 1 and pulled out, you know, eventually, you know, Dr. Stearns, the leader, and other elements. I was like, wow, we're really reaching here when there's so many threads that are just have been hanging even since just a few shows ago. So like, for example, one that kind of I was kind of like surprised by was, so the post-credit scene from the Falcon Winter Soldier sets up Sharon Carter as the power broker. It's finally revealed she's kind of like the baddie behind the scenes, pulling a bunch of strings. And I'm like, well, it kind of would seem to make sense to have her engaged in the story of international gangs and
yes,
international intrigue. And she's nowhere to be found in the story, which I was like, okay, well, that's an interesting choice. I like your analogy, though, with pulling elements from phase 1. It's almost like we're kind of resetting the Avengers and trying to start from almost like a form of phase 1 all over again. We're trying to rebuild on, I mean, maybe that's what they're trying to do, is kind of rebuild on what was so successful in those first three phases. I guess my biggest concern is that could end up feeling like you're just treading over the same territory all over again. So it's kind of it's a dicey game. I honestly don't know what the long-term vision is. I mean, obviously they're going to have a new Avengers team at some point in time. And then you've got, you know, we're bringing back Chris Evans apparently at some point in time. You know, I guess we're still doing the multiverse thing. So
yeah, well, because you say that, and we know that I think the next Avengers film is supposed to be Doomsday, which, you know, it has Dr. Doom in it, played by, for some inexplicable reason, Robert Downey Jr. Then we know that the other Avengers film is Secret Wars, and so. That those would be two things. So obviously, you know, building into the idea that you do need to kind of recreate the Avengers, you know, when you think of the ones that the Avengers left, you know, you've got Captain Marvel, you've got Ant-Man, you've got Doctor Strange, you've got somebody like Shang-Chi, you've got somebody like a Kate Bishop you could bring in, you know. Of course, you've got Miss Marvel that you could utilize. You've got the fact that, you know, they keep talking about whether or not they'll recast T'Challa, which I think is probably a good idea at this point, to bring him in. And then what the heck you do with Deadpool and Wolverine. And we keep kind of promising in some ways that we're going to bring in the X-Men at some point, but yeah. It's never happened. Right. You know, I love what you said there, because it's like, it does feel as though this movie, as it's continuing the story, is trying to create almost a new foundation then, in some ways, to build towards a new run at this, right? And like the comics almost, which happens many times in comics, where it's like you've stripped everything away and now you got to rebuild it all. And so I find, you know, the thing about this too, that's so interesting, of continuing this story and utilizing these elements. It's fascinating to me because, you know, my wife is an example of somebody who has not watched all of the shows. She's watched a few of them. We watched Hawkeye together. We both really enjoyed that. But other than that, Julie hasn't seen any of the other shows. She just hasn't necessarily cared to keep up. And because, yeah, there's just so much content out there. As you mentioned, I mean, all the content that's come out since Falcon Winter Soldier is crazy with the amount of shows you got. And so,
yeah, it's a hard ask for normies.
Yeah.
It really is.
For
super fans, that's one thing. I mean, you know, super fans, like for us, for Star Wars, just give me everything.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Give me a show every week. But that, you know, eventually people will push back on that and go, no, it's too much.
Right. Well, or they don't watch it.
Right.
The fact that we use Falcon and Winter Soldier as one of the bases is here, and the Eternals as a foundational element for this film. And then the Incredible Hulk, which, you know, how many people have gone back and watched that, when it was the second movie in the MCU, you know, there's a lot of stuff in there. So like there, a lot of the elements of this film, my wife kind of came out of it and like, she was like, oh, sick, was that person in a show and I miss it or something? And so I'm kind of like trying to explain where some of these characters come from. And so, you know, and her reaction was, I just kind of thought to myself, I mean, like, why do I care? You know, why am I supposed to care about these people or these characters? Because it doesn't seem, because she was asking me, she's like, well, but who are the Avengers that are left? And like, why aren't we doing anything with them? And I was like, well, so we start going through the list of who's there. And I'm like, I don't know. I mean, and so it feels like when I look at phase four and now at phase five, there are so many minor characters that they've been kind of building into that doesn't feel like they're doing anything with. I specifically think of like creating the Moon Knight show, and it's like, is that ever going to be seen again? Will anybody care? You know, you think of, are we really going to utilize anything that happened in Werewolf by Night? Are we going to, I mean, you now,
or like, even the Ironheart.
Yes.
I know she's going to have her own show here at some point this year,
mm-hmm.
but is she being groomed to be an Avenger? I honestly don't know.
And I think that was their thought process, that she would be their new, suited Iron Man type character, but who knows? And so in the idea of like continuing the story and utilizing these pieces, I don't think that it's actually a terrible idea if that's how, you know, you want to do it, right? I think all of the pieces that you're actually using, I think, are legitimate and they make sense and they can work really well together. But whether or not then this continuation and its execution worked, I don't know, because my feeling watching this film was I could feel every moment of development hell that this movie went through.
Yeah. Yeah. I think one of the problems is Marvel has stopped working from this concept of story and characters first. And now we're just kind of trying to cobble pieces together to make a story out of the disparate pieces we have. and to try to construct this thing. And I don't know that. Well, I know for a fact that doesn't work in filmmaking. And you can feel that with this film. The problem is, I told my wife after I saw the film, I said, it just feels like a Frankenstein's monster of a movie. It's like there's bits here that clearly were shot separate from everything else. Like all the scenes with Giancarlo Esposito don't feel related to the rest of the film at all. It feels like a separate adventure. Even the stuff when it gets like to be a really big CGI heavy film, like most Marvel films do at the end, that feels like a completely separate film from Sam's story with Isaiah's story, that's tied in at the beginning of the film, that kind of relates to Falcon and Winter Soldier. These all feel like these different elements that are clashing to try to make a coherent story. And it just that's the problem with this film altogether. I've said, if you're just watching it for action set pieces and just for entertainment, yeah, fine, it'll work like that. But when you start kind of peeling away the layers, it kind of starts to go, that kind of is a strange decision you made there.
Yeah, I think you pointed out a lot of the places where you can just feel that there was a vibe shift in the movie, and I think too, one of the clear points of that is just the look of the film. The beginning of the film looks better than the end of the film because it feels like the end of the film was something that was rushed into production and finished very quickly as compared to the rest of the film. And then, like you said, all of the different story elements. What's interesting is we know that the Falcon and the Winter Soldier show had a whole story element pulled out of it. And this movie also feels like that there were story elements that were pulled out of and other story elements plugged in. And it just it's like when you're putting a puzzle together and you have that puzzle piece you think fits, but it doesn't, right? And then you realize it later on when you put the rest of the puzzle together. And that's what this whole movie feels like, is like puzzle pieces that you thought fit together, but then when you actually get closer to completion, you're like, I don't really feel like this comes together in the way that it's supposed to, because in the end, it doesn't feel like a cohesive picture the way you would want, when you're, again, when you're putting a puzzle together. And so that's something I think that's frustrating. And I think part of that too is even just, I feel like the clunky way in which I don't think it's a terrible way to do this, but to introduce animantium because of the Eternals Celestial coming out of, that just feels like such a strange thing to do when we haven't even introduced the mutants to this world, except for the fact that Miss Marvel, we know, is a mutant. Other than that, like, we don't have any other context for there being mutants in this universe. And so it's like you're introducing a big part of the X-Men universe before you even have a concept of there really being mutants in this universe. And let's be honest, how many people have actually seen Miss Marvel to know that there are mutants in this universe in the first place?
And that goes to some of the problems. There are scenes like there's stuff with Sam and Isaiah that feels like it's echoing the show, Falcon and Winter Soldier,
Yes.
and it seems like the director wanted to lean on that, and that's fine, and I'm fine with ex see, the one thing I think audiences have to accept, even super fans have to accept it. Sometimes we are going to travel over the same territory that a show addressed, because they've got to address the fact that not a whole lot of people watch Falcon and Winter Soldier. So we're going to have to address the Sam issue of, does he feel worthy? Is will the country accept a black man taking on the Captain America mantle? And it at times the movie has lines and a couple of scenes that kind of go toward that, but then it never really leans into that at all. It kind of backs away from it. And it's like, okay, well, clearly that's a scene that was shot early in the production. And somewhere along the way, when Disney decided, oh, we're not going to get into politics anymore, somebody somewhere said, hey, we got to back off this.
Well, and just to interject real quickly, and that's very much the tone of this film, feeling as though at one moment there's one tone and another moment there's another tone. And so you don't get consistency, like, in which when we talked about the idea of this wanting to be the next Winter Soldier, you want that vibe, right? That movie is completely 100% consistent across the board in that paranoid 1970s political thriller. Like, you don't know what's going on, and it's rocking your brain as the characters, right? Because they can't figure out who's pulling the strings, that kind of stuff. And that's what this movie is billed as. But and to your point, you would want then those that kind of more political discussion of a black man as Captain America and all of those type of things to be a part of that discussion. And yet there's too many places where the movie, it's like it kind of like pretends like it wants to talk about those things, and then it's almost like it pulls the rug out from under you and be like, nope, we're backing away from that.
And then the other issue, and this goes to story in general, by using the leader, Dr. Stearns, since he's this probabilitist, that's his superpower. He can see probabilities. It's almost like the writers just decided we're going to use his ability as kind of a crutch for our own lack of ability in
That's a
writing.
good way to put it.
And it's super lazy because it seems at one point he has he's put all these chess pieces on the board, but no matter what Cap's decision is in the story, that was one of the probabilities the leader says, has foreseen. So he's compute, he's computed an idea to circumvent that. So it's kind of one of these heads I win, tails you lose scenarios. So there's really no sense of surprise there. And the thing that's there's no sense that Cap's going to do anything that's going to make the leader have to modify his plan at all. It's all like kind of like laid out there, and the audience and Cap know it all. The audience and Captain America know the full plot, except for the very end, the Red Hulk aspect of it, about 40 minutes into the movie.
Well,
You know what's going on,
we'll talk
and
about
it's
it in a
like
second, but they already know about the Red Hulk because they saw the trailer, So.
So what kind of frustrated me, there were two scenes in particular that just drove that point home. There was the one scene, it's at about the two-third mark, I think, when Cap's buddy is at the training facility, and he gets the call that, oh, he's been feeding him Hulk pills, basically, and he's going to turn into the Hulk. And the leader just happens to show up. And it's like, how would you even know this call's happening? How would you even know these events happened? Because you were nowhere near these events. They had already confirmed that nobody was under this guy's control. And all of a sudden he shows up and then, screws up his heart and he's dead. And then I'm just sitting there going, wait a minute, that so basically you're just leaning on his ability to give you an out for everything. And that's not smart storytelling. The one thing I can say about Falcon and Winter Soldier, even when it got somewhat predictable, there were still surprises. There were still like little elements made, whoa, I wasn't expecting that,
Well, I mean, you mentioned Agent Carter and the fact that, she turns out to be the villain in that, I think is a nice twist, right? And the reason too that she becomes a villain is a nice twist. And so, I couldn't agree with you more. I absolutely think that you're right on target with the whole problem of the leader being the storytelling device crutch. He's like the magic eight ball that they can shake whenever they need to for the right thing to show up so that the next thing can happen, which, it's never good when something in a movie or a story that you're reading in a book or a TV show you're watching where you feel like a plot device thing happens because it needs to happen for the next thing to happen instead of it feeling organic to the characters and their journey. And
Right, and that was the whole problem. Sorry to interrupt. That
no,
was the
go
whole
for
problem
it.
with Giancarlo Esposito's character. That was the whole problem with his character. He was nothing more than, Basil Exposition from the Austin Powers movies. He's just there to dump information so the
Exactly.
captain can
Yep.
continue on his journey. He has
Well,
no other function in that movie.
and you've got a great person to deliver exposition to you, but that doesn't change the fact that, he is the it's like why do we have the Hermione Granger of the MCU here who's just going to tell us all the plot point information we need to know? That J.K. Rowling's famous for saying that anytime she needed something explained, Hermione was the perfect person to do it. I mean, I get that if you need to have exposition done and you need to have it done in a sinister way, Giancarlo Esposito is
He's your
fantastic. But
man.
on top of that, like, tone thing, one of the things that you had brought up and I really appreciate was just like the whole idea of the geopolitics of this with the leader's plan. It actually it's hurt in the story because the people who are against us and are kind of the foils for America in this, President Ross are a non-nuclear power. In the sense of, this would be so much more terrifying it as a political thriller when you think about it, that the string pulling behind the scenes is going to create a nuclear war between us and somebody else. And so, it doesn't really necessarily make sense for this to be Japan when it probably should be somebody like China or Russia, where there's that real imminent threat that at any moment we could all be gone because somebody pulled a string that caused, total annihilation.
So this is one of the things I got to say. In the 80s, the James Bond films did so well. Is these films still got released in Russia, but they always made it like a third party within Russia who was acting outside of the Politburo's,
Right. Yes. Yes.
power structure, who was creating all this chaos. So you still had the threat of Russia being the big nuclear specter. And oh my God, James Bond's got to save the day, whether it be Fear Eyes Only or Octopussy. But this, I'm sitting there going, why Japan? I'm like, I get from the technology standpoint, Japan makes sense, but I can't see any circumstance in which Japan and the United States would come to blows
Yeah. Well, I mean, Living
over
Daylights
something
does the
like
same thing,
this.
right? I mean, we're even in
So
Afghanistan at that point.
it would certainly make more sense that had the foil been China. I get why they didn't go there because they got to release this movie in China, but you could have gone with Russia,
Yes.
as a simple out,
Yes.
or you could have had a third party, a third party involved behind the scenes that's really pushing those two powers toward conflict with the United States. And the leader just kind of doesn't do that because his whole plan is all just, oh, I just want Ross to Hulk out, and reveal who he's really is. That's
Yeah.
his plot.
Yeah.
And that was the thing that was weird. I'm like, wait a minute. You have the ability to manipulate people's minds. Why wouldn't you want to manipulate Ross's mind when he's the Hulk? Because now you have this beast tamed under your command. You could wreak all kinds of havoc.
Exactly.
And I'm just like, this his plan is just kind of like, I just want to make him mad. So he loses his child,
Yeah.
so his daughter completely shuts him off and the world can see what a horrible person he is.
Because the only thing that this ultimate statistician can do is go for revenge. That's it.
So, and the weird thing too, I just to go back to the leader's plot. I was sitting there going, God, I've seen this before. When people were looking at their cell phones and their lights were flashing in their eyes, it wasn't quite the same. But there was Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. did this story. It was with Hydra, and they used cell phones to send a trigger word to agents, and they would flip them. And I'm like, wait. So basically, this is the problem. This show aspires to do a bunch of big stuff, but it really could have been an episode of Agent. Most of it could have been an episode of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. outside of the big spectacular fights at the end. And that's the biggest problem. This film wants to be this hip political thriller, and it's just not on really any level. It's more of an action set piece, which that's fine. I get that.
Well,
But,
and
you know,
I gotta say too, one of the things that I think hurts the film is that you gave too much away in the trailer. I
right.
remember us having a conversation, you, me, and John together when the trailer came out, and I was like, "Why are they giving away the Red Hulk?" And I'm pretty sure one of you were like, "Oh, well, he won't actually be. He's like the MacGuffin. There'll actually be something bigger." And it was like
Yeah.
there literally was nothing bigger in this film because the
Yeah.
leader wasn't it. And he was it. And so it's like the audience
Matt,
knows
honestly,
what's coming the whole time.
to be fair, I think I said that, so I'm the
I was just like, but
No.
I thought both of you were right.
Yeah.
You're like, oh,
Yeah,
that
there has to
makes
be something
complete
bigger.
sense, you know?
Right. Because that's how all these Marvel films lead to. It's the funny thing, the trailers generally would show you something from the finale, but not the big thing. They'd hold that off. But this, they showed you the whole thing. And I think I have to think the concern was that what they had that they could pull from the rest of the film wasn't enough to get off. They felt they feared wasn't enough to get audiences on board with this film. So instead we lean on, it's the Hulk. Hey, it's Harrison Ford. He's turning. And the fact that they even reveal that Harrison Ford is the one turning into the Hulk rather than maybe it's somebody else, and you don't know that. It's just so much was given away by the trailer of this film. It
Right.
just,
Yeah.
it was,
Well, because
it
you
was
could
insane.
have had shown the face off between them, and there's the moment, and I think it was even in the teaser because you didn't see who the Hulk was, but the teaser was is the Hulk throwing the shield into the ground.
Yeah.
And so all you saw was his feet. You knew there was going to be a Red Hulk. But you didn't know who it was or how it was going to happen. It was like, that's what you should have done. You should have never
Right.
let out that this was going to be Harrison Ford as Ross. Because what's interesting about this is that there is a great storyline to be told with Harrison Ford playing, taking over for William Hurt, which we're all sad to have lost. Harrison Ford was a perfect choice. I mean, he's the best part of this movie, I think, honestly. His portrayal is great. And the character arc for him is very interesting, right? Because Ross is the man who can never take responsibility for his own actions. And that's
Yep.
what this movie really comes to, is him paying for the mistakes that he's made. He pays the price finally, and it's great as a piece of character movement. But the problem is one, we already basically know what's going to happen because we've seen the trailers, and two, I'm sorry, but it doesn't work for Sam Wilson. I don't care if you're wearing a vibranium suit to bring down a Hulk.
Yeah, that was the other thing. So just to touch back on the geopolitical thing too, is which I was really like kind of flummoxed with, is okay, so adamantium is going to change the course of the world. This is now the new hot tech. And the Wakandans gave Sam all this tech for his new suit. Why are the Wakandans not even in the store? Why are they not even mentioned? Because wouldn't they have a really huge something to say that, this kind of ethnocentric techno country, now all of a sudden their power is being undercut. They're no longer the big game in town. Now it's adamantium. It's adamantium everything. You would think they would be involved in that. The weird thing, I think it was my daughter ended up seeing it with my grandson, and she ended up pointing out that, it's really funny that, Sam actually becomes almost all the Avengers in a way, to fight the Hulk because his suit is clearly got a lot of Tony Stark tech in it. He's wearing Ant-Man's helmet. He's got Cap's shield, and he's got Wakandan technology and knives and blades and all this stuff, so he can actually damage the Hulk. It's like he's like all of the Avengers now in this one character. And it was just kind of, it was, I was a little like, okay, I guess we're doing this. So, but I agree with you. Harrison Ford's one of the best things about this film. His portrayal, he really does a good job of that part of the story works so well. And even the stuff between him and Cap is perfect. The tone is just perfect. That's the kind of stuff I really wanted to see more of, was the two of them interacting. And then the finale at the end is just is pitch perfect for the story. I just wish the rest of the story around it to get us to that point had lived up to that point of the film, you
Yeah,
know?
I agree. Well, no, I mean I couldn't agree with you more because, as we're talking about what's happening with Ross and his character arc and how interesting it actually is and it could have been, in so many ways so much better. It's also a frustrating thing because literally this is the only time that we're going to bring back Betty Ross into this story. We're actually going to have Liv Tyler show up on a green screen and not be with anybody else in the movie at all. She's playing to no one, but that like literally like I, that's what I couldn't understand is that in instead of Cap being the one who brings him down and then talks him down, why is the key not bringing Betty there? Why
Yeah,
isn't you? I mean, basically, you just should be doing, Zack
I
Snyder's
was predict
Justice
you know
League.
right I was predicting that. I when we got toward the end, I'm like, oh, okay, so he's got him inside the trees, you know, he's gonna see the blossoms. And what better thing to do than bring Betty in? You know, he's called Betty. Betty's agreed to show up and talk him down, and that's how he gets talked down out of being Red Hulk. But we don't get that. We get Cap talking him down, which I'm
Yeah.
like, I guess,
Yeah.
but maybe they felt that was too predictable, because that's what exactly what I was expecting. I was expecting her to get out of a car. You know, this car was
Yeah.
going to pull up or
Exactly.
something, and she was going to get out and she was going to talk him down.
Well, and can I just say too, like it would have been wonderful because it helps the redemption part for Ross, and
Yeah.
it helps bring them back together in a way that's really beautiful and begins that healing process, I think, in a way that in a lot of ways pays homage to the character all the way back to the Incredible Hulk. It makes that
Yeah.
complete circle there. Whereas, what we get there at the end of the film where it's just her showing up, it feels so lackluster and it just lacks the true emotion that you would have felt there. And I'm sorry, but the criminality of the way in which Liv Tyler's Betty Ross has been ha in this in the entire MCU has
Yeah.
been treated with is terrible because and the disregard for the Hulk in general because that's his main love interest
Right.
always. And so the fact that they just have never done anything with her until now, I just feel like it's really disrespectful in a lot of ways. And in some ways, I almost wish she didn't hadn't shown up at all because the utilization of her is so
Oh, it's so bad.
frustrating.
She clearly did not show up on set. They
Exactly.
had a body double
Yeah.
stand in.
Yeah.
They just put her face on the body double. And
Yeah, he
that
had her do
was
some ADR and it just,
right. Exactly. And then the other person I really felt bad for in this film, honestly, because he's such a great actor, is Carl Lumley. He as Isaiah Bradley, he is such
Yeah,
a good
I
actor.
agree.
And what really kind of I was really kind of mystified by one thing. I was like, they set up in Falcon and Winter Soldier, you know, his past being a super soldier and all that stuff. And I was like, oh, you know what would have been cool? I was thinking about this after the fact. How about have him and Cap working together at the beginning to bring down the Serpent Society? You know,
Yes.
have him in the outfit, you know, and you know. Because it just seemed kind of weird that he's randomly invited to the. Now I know it's all quote unquote part of the leader's plan, but he gets invited to the White House for this big Tuxan dinner event. It would make more sense if he had been part of the team that had brought down the Serpent Society, and they were bringing him to the White House as a way of congratulating him for the work he's done. But instead, he gets kind of it's the stuff he's in at the beginning is great, and then he just gets reduced to a couple of these scenes here and there where they need him to kind of be the ticking clock, because
Yes,
they're gonna kill him.
yeah.
You know, they're gonna put him on trial and kill him. And
Yeah.
I'm just like,
I agree with you. I mean, because it would have been, I think, more interesting instead of basically like replaying his story again, in the sense
Right,
of
which
like,
they
we're gonna
did.
put him back into prison and yada yada. It's like, why don't we have there being kind of like this really cool redemption story for him and this ability to really in some ways find through being able to utilize these gifts for good, be able to find a new purpose, you know, and maybe even a love for his country in the same way that Sam has, right? And I couldn't agree with you more. It's sad because I think he really is great in the movie, and I think he is a good actor, and that's the other thing too. I mean, it's just, you mentioned the fact that with Cap, with his story, we kind of have to replay a lot of the thematic elements for Sam. And what I find is it's not terrible, but the problem is in some ways it almost gets in the way of just being able to do the true political thriller nature of this, where that should be the sole focus of trying to figure out. And since he never actually has to really figure anything out, because you know they just find the leader in like 5 minutes, because it's the leader's plan for him to be found, you know, there's no real intrigue, and you don't really get this character, I think, truly being put through the fire, you know, in the way that a political thriller kind of takes your character and just rakes him over the coals, in the same way that, you know, Steve got raked over the coals in Winter Soldier, which is exactly what you kind of want here. And so I think that hurts the story for Sam Wilson. But I also think there is one great scene in this movie, and that really truly great scene is the scene with Bucky and Sam. Because their dynamic is so great. They really have chemistry, and those characters just gel on screen together. And I had to ask you, is this movie kind of hurt because Bucky doesn't get to be in the film more?
That's a good one. Yes, I'm gonna take an easy a cop out. Yes and no. No, in the sense that I really think you needed to let Sam have his own movie. You know,
That
you really
makes
need to
sense,
let
yeah.
Anth you need to let Anthony Mackie stand on his own. And having Bucky hanging around a lot, almost seems like a crutch. You know, because I think honestly, if you asked MCU fans, who do you like more, Sam Wilson or Bucky Barnes? Most everybody would gravitate to Bucky. You know, so I think not having him in the film a lot is a good idea. The great thing about that scene to me was emblematic of everything that's great about the MCU and everything that just I get annoyed with at the MCU. And they have this great scene together where, you know, Bucky's talking to him because, you know, he's the person who knew Steve best and telling him that you have all the qualities, you know, that Steve had. And then we go into this conversation about, you know, you two are different because Bucky or Steve inspired people, you know, through his super heroic abilities.
Right.
But you're more of an aspirational figure because you're the everyman, and people could literally be like you because you chose not to take the serum. And now you can agree or disagree with that. That's, you know, because honestly, there's a good argument to be made that maybe he should have taken the super soldier serum because of all the crap he goes through in this film. But it's a nice play on Sam versus Steve as Captain America. The only thing that just killed that scene for me is you couldn't just leave that scene there. You know, we had to have, was that a good speech? I thought that was a pretty good speech. You know, in the comedy bit at the end, I was just like, do we really need to do that?
Well,
You're just
basically, it's the same thing that you do, and you get with Brad Pitt and Clooney in Ocean's 11. Did I rush it? I felt like I rushed it.
Did I rush it? I felt like I rushed it. Yeah. And it's just like, you could have just left the scene there because it was a great scene. It was a wonderful moment, really well written. And then you just had to interrupt it with the standard, you know, kind of Marvel humor.
Exactly.
Which, you know.
Yeah. You know, one of the other things that's big in this movie is we do introduce a new character to the MCU with Root Bat Seraph. And, you know, this is a character who, from the Marvel Comics, is Sabra, I think is how you say her name, who is a mutant and a former Mossad agent, or an actual Mossad agent, you know, so Israeli Secret Service. And, of course, they completely discount that part of her storyline, and which I think is a disservice to the character. But I think the biggest disservice to the character is the fact that she's not a mutant, and they make her just a former Black Widow assassin. And so that the casting of this character doesn't work at all with the storyline they give her, because the person they cast needs to be a mutant to explain how she can beat people up who are three times her size. And it's no disrespect to her as an actress. That's not what this is about. It just doesn't make any sense if she's not a mutant and has the ability to have superhuman strength, speed, and agility and reflexes, which are all that make sense. Because I don't care whether you're a Black Widow or not. You're not going to be able to do what she does in this film and have it work out. And so on top of that, if you're trying to introduce animantium in this film and you're trying to slowly introduce the idea of there being mutants in this world, it is a perfect opportunity for her to be able to beat people up. And the question in the minds of somebody like Sam, how is she doing this? And you just give a glimmer of her being a mutant. You are building into the MCU then. And I just don't understand why they don't do that. It made no sense to me.
Yeah. So her character actually, the character was introduced in the 80s in the comics. I think she first appeared in Hulk.
Incredible Hulk.
Yeah, her big coming out party, though, in terms of a character, was this really cool miniseries called Contest of Champions, which was like all the different Marvel heroes together assembled to fight these different villains. And she's super strong, and she's basically, you know, she's the Israeli equivalent of Captain America.
Right.
Now, they allegedly shot a scene with her because she has this, there's a couple of shots you can see where she had an actual outfit, but it's covered in a jacket. She had some kind of soldier outfit, but you know, you can't see what it is. There's allegedly a scene they shot where she actually rams through like a Jeep with her shoulder and just breaks it apart in half. So I'm thinking this is, again, the victim of a lot of these changes, that they just kind of changed her character. Because to your point, it would have made sense if you had a scene like that where she just totally cuts through a Jeep like butter, and everyone's like, well, how are you doing this? And she reveals that she's a mutant, and then that's kind of on the plate somewhere, you know, that there are these people called mutants. That was one of the first things when I got out of my screen and I was telling you about, I was like, this, I looked her up. She's like 5'2", but I'm like, she looks like she's maybe 80, 85 pounds. She's very, very slight.
Yes.
And there's one scene where she picks a guy, literally throws him up to the ceiling.
Yeah.
And then slams him to the ground. I'm like, I'm sorry. I don't care. Even if you're a Black Widow, you're not doing that. You know,
You never even saw Black Widow do that. You've never seen Yelena, and you've never seen Natasha do that either.
Right. And to me, that just kind of spoke to, you know, this film being kind of pasted together, and obviously they changed her background because, you know, current politics and stuff like that, because, you know, the actress is Israeli, you know, she was born in Israel,
she's still a Israeli in the movie, she's just not
Sort of kind of they really downplay that and make it more of a big deal that she's a former widow I think they say she trained with the Israelis or something, like there's like
she's
a throwaway
born,
line in
she's
there.
Born in Jerusalem she is somehow, and of course we don't know the story, she's a Black Widow, but yes, I couldn't agree with you more. I think it's just a really big missed opportunity and seems to make zero sense when the whole point of where we're kind of going, and we've been going for God knows how long now, is the fact that we're going to apparently have the X-Men at some point, some way, somehow. It just hasn't happened yet. And so, again, I mean, what doesn't make sense to me is the fact that, you know, we've had a mutant already. And so to introduce another one seems like the perfect time here to do that. And so, you know, I don't know. It's very strange. And so one of the last things I think it'd be great for us to touch on, because honestly, we could talk about the music, but it was neither bad nor good. It was just there.
There were a couple of good themes. I like there's, she wrote this, what's her name? I have the soundtrack, but she
Laura
wrote this
Cartman and Nora.
Yeah.
Noel Rosenbaum.
Yeah. The main conspiracy theme is really cool. I like that. And I do like the music whenever Ross hulked out. I thought that was really good stuff. The rest of it just seemed like, you know, kind of your generic MCU action adventure. You know, I think she comes from the TV show. So it's like something you would have seen.
I think
Ms. Marvel. I think she did Ms. Marvel. So. And it doesn't sound like anything out of the ordinary. It sounds like most all the other Marvel products. But it's a serviceable score. Yeah. It is. It's just, yeah.
I got to ask you, so the effects in the production of the film in general, I am interested to kind of get your opinion of, because as we mentioned earlier, that really is one of the things in the movie where there's a clear delineation between the beginning of the film and the end of the film and what it looks like. And so I'm really fascinated to kind of see, is this just more of a frustration and a problem with them just not really being able to live up to the work that they've done previously because they're just not giving their artists enough time to work on this?
I think that's a lot of it. I went back and I rewatched Falcon Winter Soldier yesterday, and I was shocked how well the effects hold up in that film. There's some tremendous effect shots in that film that are really complex and still look good even by today's standards. There are some effects in this movie, to be fair, like especially the first half of the film, it's handled pretty well. The biggest crimes, it's not the Red Hulk, but it's the environments around him. It just seemed, a lot of it seems rather rushed. I think it's pretty clear there were a couple of shots that were added at some point. Late in post-production, there's one shot where Cap is talking to Ross and they cut back to Cap and it doesn't even look like the background, like he hasn't been fully composited with the background yet. You can still see like he's fuzzy around the edges. And the other thing too is it lends itself to, you know, usually in post on a lot of films, you do color correction, color timing and stuff to make a film pop more, you know. Because a lot of this film is just straight up shot in the middle of the day. There's no, like, we're not looking for the golden hour or anything like that. You know, we're just shooting it right in the middle of the day. A lot of the footage just looks like, you know, they shot straight log and they just threw it up on the screen. And there was no, so it's a very plain looking film. So I think they did that mainly because you can hide a lot of the effects work with that kind of look. Because even the really, you know, even the long naval battle sequence, there's some really good shots in it, but it looks like a, you know, it looks like a video game largely. Yeah. You know, there's some individual shots that are terrific in it, but overall, just the consistent, I just think it's a lot of it is just there's too many products. They've got too many effects artists who are working on too many things at the same time, and they just don't, there's not enough time in the day to complete the work.
Yeah, I think that's a big part of it. I also think that one of the biggest issues that happens with these films is that when you change things last minute, there just isn't time to make it look the way right. you want to, and you're doing things very quickly. So when you think of that end battle between Hulk and Captain America, the problem is like you said, the Hulk himself looks good. I think they, because they had the asset they had really created and been working on for a long time. But then the problem is that the battle itself changes, it seems like. So that whole scene at the White House before he hulks out, it's like, dude, we are never in anything but like a blue screen stage, or maybe this is a volume that's not being yeah. composited back together well. And you can just completely tell, and especially that last scene, you know, as they're fighting one another amidst the cherry blossoms and everything, you just never feel like you're in a real place, which is a part of the thing that also hurts that. So, yeah, I mean, the issue, and Marvel's had this issue for a long time, honestly, which is when you change things at the last minute, your films are never going to look great. It's one of the reasons why James Gunn's Guardians of the Galaxy films always looked wonderful, is because there weren't yeah. a lot of changes happening at the end, and he was a director who could tell the visual artists exactly what he wanted. And those right. two things are incredibly important for a visual effects artist team to be able to do the work and do it in a way that everything looks consistent. And when things don't look consistent, you're going to get pulled out of the film in the end. And that's exactly what happens here. And so it's a little bit frustrating. And
yeah, it's one of the one of the reasons I think they really need to go back to directors who have a lot of experience working with heavy visual effects yes. films.
Yeah.
You know, a person like a Jon Favreau, even pull Joe Johnston out of Mothballs, I'm sure he'd be happy to do another
yeah.
film.
Yeah.
You know, they understand how to make effects work. They've worked in those fields as well. They know the language that they're trying to explain to yes. the technicians yes. that are working on that. And honestly, I'll be honest, I think that's a lot of the reasons we hear the rumblings about it every once in a while in Variety and Hollywood Reporter, why Disney is kind of fighting to allow AI as part of the visual effects work, because they kind of want to use AI to kind of finish these last minute changes, because they know they just can't work these people to death like they've been doing. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah,
They just need to slow down the output for a little bit and let people get caught up.
and it's, to be honest too, it is not just really the output that they're having a problem with. It's that they are not going into films where the story and everything is set
right.
and doesn't change 47 times. You know,
yeah.
and that's the bigger issue, is that I think the slowdown that you're asking for then would be the thing that would help them kind of cement, this is where we're going, this is what we need from each film, when this is what we need story-wise for each character, each film, to make sure we get to the next spot. And that's where, you know, the consistency that you got within, you know, I would say the first three phases, a lot more of that consistency was because they, for the most part, they knew where they were building to, and they knew the things that needed to happen in each film for each character, so they would be where they needed to be for the next film. But then you had, you know, kind of a set storyline and for that movie, and so that character felt more settled in his own film or his
yeah,
own film. And it's just like, that's not happening for so many of these movies, and that's one of the reasons that it's the story, it's the production, it's the effects, everything feels yeah. slightly off kilter from the rest of the whole.
Well, and the thing that's so funny is, I think it was yesterday or maybe the day before, one of the producers on the next film that they're getting ready to shoot in like a month or two, is that Secret Wars, or is that, which one is that? I don't remember. But the producer said, yeah, they're going to start shooting without a finished script. And I'm like,
that's probably helpful.
That to me, yeah, I'm like, that makes absolutely no sense. This is exactly the problem right here.
Yeah.
You have to have at least a draft you're comfortable with. If you want to make changes after the fact, sure, that's great. You know, screen it internally. Maybe something doesn't work. We got to reshoot something. Fine. But this just, you've got to have something laid out.
Yeah, I agree. Well, I guess in the end, it comes down to, what we're going to rate Captain America Brave New World. So, Yancey, what do you think?
I am going, so like I said, the reason I hammer this film because I love Marvel. I really want it to do well. I do. But to quote Mr. Smith, Mr. Will Smith, keep Winter Soldier out your damn mouth. This film isn't Winter Soldier. It's a serviceable action film. I'm hard on it because it said it wanted to be Winter Soldier. So if I'm being honest, it's probably for me a 4 out of 10, a 2 out of 5, something like that. If you're there for just to watch a couple of big action set pieces, yeah, it'll be fine for you. But if you're looking for something more than that, it's not probably not the film for you.
It's I'm right there with you. I think unfortunately this is definitely, 2 out of 5 shields because it just doesn't quite do what it wants to do. And I think in the end too, things just feel too messy and it's too frustrating. And even most of the action isn't all that super exciting because it does feel like a lot of the stuff we have seen in Marvel before. The whole scene, the dog fighting was not bad. And so that was kind of nice and interesting. But, on a whole, I just don't think that this movie is very good, and that's really the frustrating part, especially if you want this character in this movie to kind of be the bridge towards the next version of the Avengers, man, you really wanted this and needed this movie to pop. And I think the reason that we've seen the critical reaction to this movie not be very good, is because they got it right. And unfortunately, this movie's just not very good. So I guess, we'll see where we go next with the MCU when Thunderbolts comes out.
We'll see. The trailer looked fun,
So, and there's some pretty
but then
fun
the trailer
characters
for
in
this
there.
looked fu but
So
then the trailer for this looked fun too,
it's
so
true.
we
True.
shall see.
But Yancey, if people did want to catch up with you and see what you have got going on these days and maybe just talk a little bit more Marvel, where would they catch up with you?
Well, on Twitter/X, my handle is at Galandro1. That is a reference to the Han Solo trilogy by Brian Daley. I'm a big Star Wars nerd. You can find me on most, also on Instagram with that same handle. At Facebook, I'm under my name, Yancey Evans. So if you want to hit me up, I'm completely open to talking to anybody. I do have a blog, but I haven't blogged in so long, so I'm not even going to bother dropping that.
I am
One
guilty
day I'll
as
get back to
charged
it. I keep
with that one.
promising.
Yeah. Oh man. Well, you can find me all over the place, of course. I'm at Rushing02 all over social media. Of course, here on the network outside the 602 Club, got a bunch of great Star Trek talk going on with Chris Jones on all the different shows. So please check those out. On the Nerd Party Network, you find our good old friend John Mills and I talking Star Wars on Aggressive Negotiations, and then a completed show called Outpost about every single chapter of the Harry Potter series. But thank you, as always, so much for joining us. And y'all come back now, you hear?